Hey, listeners, on May 13th, we invite you to join us and Reid Hoffman for a new virtual strategy session presented in alliance with Capital One Business. You'll hear insights from fellow entrepreneurs about how to be at the forefront of leading change with AI. So go to mastersofscale.com AI strategy right now to register for free. Again, that's mastersofscale.com AI strategy. Looking forward to seeing you there.
Hi, listeners. It's Reid. One of the things I love about Masters of Scale is learning about business sectors I'm less familiar with. And if you know anything about me, you know that sports is one of those areas. But I know how to spot a wave. When I see valuations climbing as much as 60-fold in just 4 years, I pay attention. That's what's been happening in women's sports specifically. And that's why I'm so eager for you to dive into this up-close look at an amazing story of scale rooted in women's soccer.
We are at BMO Stadium for the Angel City home opener. It is a sellout crowd. It is a gorgeous, perfect Los Angeles day. This is the single best in-venue sports experience in Los Angeles. This is as good as it gets.
Since day one, I've been coming. My parents and I bought season tickets, and it's so pro-women, you know, and I love seeing the dads and daughters. I love seeing all the Hollywood, right, the hype of, oh my gosh, I might see someone really cool, and you feel instantly, like I'm instantly happy at every game.
My name's Jason Sudeikis. Well, I brought Otis, that's my son Otis, I brought my daughter Daisy and my buddy Chip. All the fans that have been here and supporting bought season tickets since the get-go and everybody that helped, yeah, create this environment. I'm lucky to be here, and this is my first one.
I'm a soccer player myself. I play the 10, the attacking center mid. But I wanted to see the girls I look up to, the girls who I consider some of my mentors, and it's just a really fun experience.
It's competitive, yes, but this is probably the nicest, cleanest, happiest sporting event I've ever attended. Feels like it's a mission and a community, and the fan base is just so viral and intense. It's just nice to be with them.
When this team was founded, NWSL franchises were going for just a few million dollars. We just had our first nine-figure sale, and the valuation of Angel City is starting to reach the levels we're seeing in American men's soccer. You've never seen anything like this in women's sports in America.
You got to have incredible talent at every position.
It's like this huge push.
There are fires burning when you're going home.
Can you believe it?
Such an idiot. And then you go back to, this is totally going to be amazing.
There are so many easy wins.
I'm supposed to know what to do. I have no idea what to do.
Sorry, we made a mistake.
But you have to time it right.
Oops.
Working out of a three-bedroom apartment.
Stuff that just seems absolutely nutballs. 10 years later, I'm like, well, that's just how you do it.
We haven't made
just how you do it.
This is Masters of Scale.
Hi, listeners. It's Erica Flynn, VP of Alliances and Audience Development at Wait What, the company behind Masters of Scale. My day-to-day consists of nonstop communication, not only with my immediate team, but with our current partner relationships and with incoming leads from possible future partners, which is why I rely on the ease of Grammarly to keep my communication clear and efficient. One confusing email can turn into several confused replies, which can turn into an unexpected meeting which no one wants, needs, or has time for. Having Grammarly on hand as my trusted AI writing partner not only streamlines my extensive to-do list, it minimizes miscommunication by quickly and efficiently synthesizing information and carefully curating tailor-made responses to specific groups. In fact, companies that use Grammarly to communicate can save 19 days per year per employee. Grammarly eases the writing process. It's a writing partner from the blank page to the last word typed before hitting send. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster, hit their goals, and keep their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
I'm Jeff Berman, your host. People who know me know I'm a huge sports fan. So much so that I've worked for the National Football League and helped launch a company called Together, focused on elevating stories about women's sports. I've been incredibly fortunate to attend a massive range of ridiculously exciting sporting events, including for all of the major sports teams in LA. So I feel especially qualified to share with you that nothing compares to the atmosphere to match for Angel City Football Club at BMO Stadium. It's a young team with magnetic energy, and I tell everyone who visits Los Angeles that going to a game is an absolute must. The atmosphere is no accident. It's a key part of the team's incredible journey to scale. Since its founding just 4 years ago, the Angel City Football Club has become one of the fastest-growing sports franchises in American history. In this episode, you'll hear how it was done, with two of Angel City's co-founders, Kara Nortman and Julie Ehrman. Kara comes from venture capital, and she's been key in making Los Angeles a VC hub through firms like Upfront Ventures and her new fund, Monarch Collective. Julie is a longtime executive and founder of the gaming company Ouya. Julie and Kara launched ACFC with actor and activist Natalie Portman. It's been said that those who dream most do most. That is absolutely the case with Kara, Julie, and Natalie. They embarked on this mission with a clear and big set of goals. One, to show that women's sports are not a charity or a cause, but a real valuable business. Two, to drive gender equity through women earning what they're worth and getting recognition at least on par with men's talent. And three, to create a killer brand that's also a platform for community and social good. As Angel City rockets toward a $200 million valuation, far higher than any other women's sports franchise in American history, it is a case study in using the outsider's advantage to tap an underserved market and how to use that fresh perspective to innovate and thrive, like a soccer team, in perfect sync. The story starts with Kara Nortman, wowed by the best players in the world.
So in 2015, I went to the Women's World Cup Finals with my three daughters, my husband, and my parents.
Here in Vancouver, we have a repeat of the final from 4 years ago.
We sat in the stadium, and the way I described it is, as a 39-year-old working mom of three, I was just like so excited watching Carly Lloyd score.
And here they come again, the long-range effort from Lloyd! Oh, my goodness!
And I felt 12 again. You know, it felt joyful. I think I was sort of came alive in a way sometimes we lose when we're just trying to keep all the balls in the air.
It's a hat trick!
And so, what do you want to do when you have joy in America? You want to buy stuff. And I went to nine stores to buy a jersey for one of my daughters. Couldn't find any. Started with, why won't anyone take my money, right?
I'm curious, how do you make the leap from that spark and that joy and that frustration about not being able to find the kit for your kid or for yourself to actually deciding you're going to go on this adventure of building a club?
It really was a process of this curiosity journey of asking people, I don't understand, am I the only person who wants to watch women play football more than every 4 years? And a lot of people said, yes, literally, Kara, you're the only person. Everybody else just wants to watch it at the World Cup and maybe the Olympics and then not after. And it just instinctually, it didn't feel right. And I would say I had this instinct of like, there's something wrong here.
I love Kara's framing of a curiosity journey. She identified a gap in the market sparked by a personal desire. So she went out and asked questions. The people she asked did not confirm her hunch. In fact, they shut her down. But Kara struck a key balance, one that's part of how many great ideas take shape. She kept following her instincts. Kara discovered that two U.S. professional women's soccer leagues had failed. The WUSA and WPS formed and then disbanded after just a few seasons. Basically, they ran out of money. In 2012, a new league started, the National Women's Soccer League, or NWSL. U.S. women's soccer is known as world-class, with the U.S. women's national team globally dominant for decades. And those players joined NWSL teams. But the machinery to make the league feel big time wasn't there. Games weren't broadcast live on any major network or streamer. Sports media didn't give it much attention. No major sponsors signed on. But this all just grew the fire that was lit for Kara. She saw the lack of investment as connected to overall gaps in gender equity. This was on her mind as a member of Time's Up, an organization created to help victims of sexual harassment. The Time's Up Summit in 2018 brought together women across entertainment, business, and more. It was a seminal moment for Kara.
I was on stage, and at the end, I said, "This is an incredible group of women here. Our job is to make this room bigger and bring new people in every day. But while you're here, go up to someone in another industry who you're interested in getting to know, who you'll probably never do business with, give them your number, and go have a meal. And if they're weird, block them." Natalie Portman came up to me.
She said,
"Would you mind if I gave you my number?" And I didn't have to think very hard.
Right. That's kind of an intelligence test.
Queen of Star Wars says, "I'd like to give you my number." And anyway, she literally put her name on my phone as Natalie P. And when we finally had a meal, we talked about just everything you can imagine in the world. In the last 20 minutes, we talked about soccer. And she said, "How can I help?" And that's when Natalie and I really built a friendship.
While not a lifelong fan herself, Natalie saw the power of soccer through her husband and kids, who were as likely to wear the jersey of men's star Lionel Messi as women's star Megan Rapinoe. Kara's and Natalie's friendship grew, as did their frustration. It led them to a bold idea: create a new team. This was in 2019, when neither Kara nor Natalie could devote themselves to this project full time. They needed someone dedicated to the effort, someone to treat it like the startup it was going to be. And Kara knew just the person, Julie Ehrman. Their history went all the way back to high school when they played on rival basketball teams. And they played pickup basketball as adults, too. Here's Julie.
You know, Kara and I aren't the only venture and tech people in LA. It turns out there's a lot of women in our industry that grew up playing basketball. And we have a very good friend who runs the Wild Feminists Who Tech Basketball League. On August 19th of 2019, Monday evening, there was a match. I call everything match now, and it's wrong. There was
fine.
A game,
that's
and basketball is referred to as a game. There was a game, and
I was very sweaty.
Yes, there were some bloody noses, if I recall. When you get older, the elbows start to go everywhere, and it's dangerous.
We will not tell you who is a hack.
Kara was just back from her second Women's World Cup, this time in France, where the U.S. Women's National Team won yet again.
And when we were leaving, Kara and I were walking away from the court to our cars, and she said, "Julie, Natalie Portman and I are thinking about bringing a women's football team to LA. You're an entrepreneur. You know how to build things. Do you have any bandwidth to research this? And I'll introduce you to everybody I've talked to, and then you can see if there's a there there." And I looked at her and I said,
Natalie
Portman? No, I did not say hell yes. Hell yes might have been like the third or fourth thing. First, it was like the Natalie Portman, and she said yes. And I said, okay. And then I said, wait, there's women's professional soccer in the United States.
Like Kara, who didn't find out about the National Women's Soccer League until after her first World Cup, Julie hadn't heard of the NWSL either. In fact, Julie hadn't spent much time around soccer, even though she's a huge sports fan. Kara wanted her as part of the Angel City founding team, and she thought the way in was giving Julie a taste of the experience.
I do remember that first conversation a little differently, but...
How so? Wait, how so? I want to hear it. How so?
Wow. I knew it was a little bit of a hard sell to get somebody of Julie's talent to want to run a non-existent women's soccer team, you know? So I said to her, I was like, "Hey, we have this crazy idea. I've been working on it for a while, and I think it's just about to become real. But if it becomes real, we need someone to run it." And I said, "I'm going to a game with Natalie Portman. I'm going to this El Trafico game with Natalie
about that.
Portman. I have some extra tickets."
El Trafico is the big men's soccer game in LA, a match between crosstown rivals, the LA Galaxy and the Los Angeles Football Club, or LAFC. It's a huge draw and a lot of fun.
You get Julie into a live stadium. That's how, like, I just knew it was going to be a lot easier after she saw that.
I'd never been to a soccer match before in my life, and I was blown away by what the LAFC fans created. I've been to national championship games. I've watched SEC football games. Like, I know what fandom looks like, and soccer fans are different. The fandom around soccer is so special. And then again, the idea that, God, if we could build this for women's football, we're going to change the game.
This is a terrific example of landing a pitch by showing, not telling. Kara and Natalie Portman could have tried to sell Julie on their idea with data that LA has a huge soccer fan base, or that ticket sales would be this big or that big. But showing her the fans' passion and the crowd of all genders and generations and ethnicities and races was much more powerful. Even though the NWSL didn't have the profile of the NBA or even the WNBA, it wasn't like you could just snap your fingers and get a team. Julie, Kara, and Natalie would have to raise millions of dollars up front. And you can't just buy your way in. Like any pro sports league, all the NWSL owners had to agree to let the league expand to Los Angeles, along with approving the ownership group. And the LA team would need local agreements, like with a stadium in which to play their games. So, Julie, you've been an entrepreneur, you've started companies, and if you're starting a tech company, it's a pretty straightforward process, right? You're going to incorporate, you're going to probably raise a little bit of money from friends and family and get going and try to find a proof of concept and product market fit. If you're starting a professional soccer team, the process is not quite that simple.
Yeah, it's very different. And the irony is the building of a sports team is a lot easier than the building of a technology team, because when most businesses are built on the internet and everybody can be your competitor, everybody is your competitor. So they're not willing to open up their playbook, explain their cost of acquisition or their churn or their lifetime value or how they retain customers. Like, that is their secret sauce. And what's so unique about sports in the most fundamental way is that it's a local business. So if I'm buying a ticket to an Angel City football match, I'm probably not buying a ticket to see Washington Spirit play. So we can share information in a very different way and apply it to our market in a way that's more authentic, where we're not competing.
Unlike her tech endeavors, Julie wasn't creating something entirely from scratch. She was bringing an existing product to a new market. And while they are obviously competitors on the pitch, the franchise owners all benefit from a new team's success, making the league more powerful, more popular, and more valuable. Julie wanted to start a team in a way that women's sports had never seen before.
So the first thing that I did was start to research, like, who are the best sports teams in the world and what makes them the best in the world, and who in my network has relationships with people in sports. The first thing that I learned, which was actually fascinating, was that 90% of all sports teams don't make money.
Because they're toys for wealthy people, effectively?
Yeah, they're vanity projects. Yeah. You know, their salary cap far exceeds whatever they could generate in revenue from a local business, right? Ticket sales, sponsorship, merchandise, concessions.
Yeah.
And so that was really fascinating. And then I started to research, well, how do you make money owning sports? Because I don't want to build a business that I can't make money in. That's not part of my DNA.
This is Kara.
You know, so many people would tell you why it didn't work. And just sort of getting to the, what's the one thing you need to get right? Like, what's the one assumption?
So what's the one thing?
Butts in seats. Okay. And in a weird way, it's sort of like super simple. The whole model worked if you could get 9 or 10,000 people to show up 12 times a year. And I'm like, this is a city of 15 million people where if you can do something entertaining once, people will, like, if they love it and they feel a part of it, they'll come back.
But even their innovative plan for profits didn't land with the investors they first approached.
We had a lot more barriers walking in the door to begin with. First, you had three female founders that had no experience in sports. I mean, that was a huge impediment when we walked in the door. And then it wasn't just about building a women's football club. I was focused on, I want to build a business that makes money. If I want to change the narrative around women's sports to say that it's investable and there's growth opportunity, there's huge value, I have to show that I'm better than 90% of the teams that we all take for granted. I think it's really important that people know that Natalie was in the room with us pitching. This was not a project in name only for celebrities, which I think is a lot of celebrities get the rub for. But Natalie was really invested and involved in this from day one. When we would talk about the experience of Angel City, Natalie would talk about how she wanted to recreate the Showtime era of the 1980 Lakers, where you were coming to a game either to see Magic Johnson or to see who Jack Nicholson brought courtside. That was the vibe that we were going for. So we were going to invest in the experience. We got over 99 no's, and it was from everything from there's 11 professional sports teams in LA, there's the beach, there's the mountains, women's sports isn't investable, women's sports has no growth, people aren't going to show up. Is this a charity or is this a business?
We had hilarious meetings with very famous people who said things like, you should get some wealthy person's child who's lost in life to do this.
And then the more reasonable no's were like, what do you know about sports? Like, that's fair. Like, I'll give them to that was fair. But I think the challenge that we ran into often was that we really were pitching a different type of company. We wanted to build a company where mission and capital could coexist, where we wanted to have a positive impact in the community while we were building a women's professional team. And we were going to invest in that team. And after the 99 O's, we had a phone call and you said, if we can't figure this out, like, I don't know how much more we can go at this.
If you've ever tried to sell anything in your life, you know how discouraging it is to hear nothing but no after no after no. But it can also offer the wake-up call you need. If something isn't working, you have to be honest with yourself and your team. Maybe it's something in the pitch, or maybe it's pitching to the wrong people. After the break, Kara and Julie tell us about the pivot that turned everything around for Angel City.
Hey, listeners. It's Jodine Dorsey, the VP of Live Events at Wait What, the company behind Masters of Scale. I am constantly tasked with reaching out to teams across a wide spectrum of professions and the vastly different personalities that go with them. Grammarly helps me quickly shift tones to better communicate what I want to say and saves me valuable time in the process. Our upcoming Masters of Scale Summit event features top-tier speakers from CEOs to founders to political leaders. Grammarly's ability to produce on-brand writing helps me properly prepare for each and every thought leader I interact with on stage. It lets me generate the most exciting, specialized content for our audience. In fact, teams that use Grammarly report 66% less time spent editing marketing content, which I've seen firsthand with my summit team. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster, hit their goals, and keep their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
We're back with the story of Angel City Football Club on Masters of Scale. You can watch the entire interview on the Masters of Scale YouTube channel, along with more from our full catalog. 99 investors rejected the idea of the founding trio of Kara Nortman, Julie Ehrman, and Natalie Portman. And they were faced with a decision. Abandon their vision or keep at it. Julie had been pitching investors on the logic of the business plan and the broader market for women's soccer, and it just wasn't working. Here's Julie again.
It was sort of that epiphany that we're not going to the right people. We're not going to the people who understand that we're truly building a platform for equity and impact, and we're going to use that platform to drive towards equity using sports. And then Natalie said, well, why don't I introduce you to Eva? Like, she loves sports. She's a fan. She's a friend. Why don't you pitch her?
Eva is Eva Longoria, the world-famous actress and producer. It was a very different pitch to a very different investor than the team had met with before.
That was an incredible pitch. So Eva was on the line with her business manager. So I do the spiel and I talk a lot about the fact that we want to build a platform. And when I was done talking, I think the first thing she said was, I'm in.
Wow.
And I said,
you got the yes in the room.
It was the first yes we got. And I said, what do you mean? Like, why? Why are you in? And she goes, I get it. She goes, I'm a platform. I use my platform to push for social causes that I care about and also my latest movie or television show or directorial debut. Like, I understand the power of a platform. And I think what you're doing is incredible. And I think this would be amazing for women's sports. And if we can use sports to change the narrative and drive to equity, she's like, I'm all in. And it not only was it the first yes, but it was the largest check we got until we raised our Series A.
By asking why she said yes, Julie unlocked a new perspective on what investors like Eva valued. She saw the social impact of the business, transforming the narrative around women's sports as driving its market value. They'd flipped the pitch to lead with gender equity, using women's soccer as the vehicle. That sparked momentum.
So our second yes then was from Alexis Ohanian, and he put both himself in personally and his fund.
He's better known as Serena Williams' husband,
yes,
by the way.
Yes. And I think actually alongside Eva coming in, Rhea Jessica Chastain and Uzo and Jennifer Garner and Lily Singh and Abby Wambach and Glennon Doyle and Billie Jean King and Lindsey Vonn.
The league approved a new expansion team for Los Angeles in July 2020. And the list of investors now reads like a who's who of female athletes and celebrities, along with luminaries from the tech world that might not be household names to everyone, but who are vital to ACFC's early success.
It was a little bit of that snowball, right? Like, it's the first yes is the hardest. But once you can talk about why that person said yes, and then you try to find like investors, who else has a platform, who also understands platform, who also understands you don't need to sacrifice mission for capital. You can do both at the same time. And it completely changed how we went about fundraising.
People in this community came together, and then we got the yes from Julie Foudy and Mia Hamm. And that was, I think, for me, the most special moment when we were building this. Like, our heroes, and even Julie and I were this weekend with Brandi Chastain and Julie Foudy, and we were like, she said to me, she's like, this is why we did it, you know? And I mean,
special. One of my favorite stories is a sponsor that we have. And we went in there to do a pitch and we said, hey, we're Angel City. And the man that we were talking to said, I just want to tell you something. Like, I'm actually not a big sports fan. I don't follow sports. I don't really care. But I know all about Angel City because I follow Sophia Bush.
Actor Sophia Bush is an investor in the team.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was a big game changer.
Angel City had investment capital, and the team found a home in BMO Stadium, where the men's team, LAFC, plays. Now, they needed to build a community to fill that stadium. And that's when Julie and Kara tapped into the understanding that sports is very much a local business.
The only way to create that emotional connection from the beginning, a year and a half before we had a player or even played a game, was to go to the community and say, what is important to you? And so we included them in picking out our colors and in designing our crest. And as we created our impact platform of equity essentials in education, it was truly about creating a relationship with our community.
That community included Tori Lathrop and Jamie Calderon, two members of the Angel City fan club Rebellion 99. They'd believed for years that a team like this should exist, but they didn't expect to be so directly involved. Here's Tori.
I didn't ever think that we would have a chance to be in those meetings and give feedback directly to the people who were working on these things. You know, maybe you could, like, you know, fill out a survey or something like that, and you never know where it goes, right? You're sitting in a Zoom camera to camera talking directly to designers and marketing team and things like that. And so that was really special, I think.
This is Jamie.
It's also not something that just happened during the beginning stages. They still include us now. If they have ideas that they want input in, they still really look for our buy-in. So it feels really intentional that they do that, because it feels like they're trying to build something with us, continuously build with us.
This is a great example of creating a sense of co-ownership with your critical stakeholders, your customers. In collaborating on early brand assets, the first Angel City fans felt emotionally connected to the product. They were invested, and they brought organic word-of-mouth marketing that shared the culture of the team, an inclusive community that fans could identify with and participate in beyond the pitch.
Myself being a queer person of color, like, I think Angel City has done a fantastic job creating an atmosphere where it doesn't matter who you are, where you're coming from. They want you to connect with other people in the stands with you.
Personally, for me, when Angel City came to Los Angeles, it brought me community. The entire week builds up to game days for me. It's this sense of anticipation. It's the planning. So I get my outfit ready. I head out probably 7 hours before the game even starts. We have picnic blankets all around, and it's all of our friends just hanging out with their babies, you know, with their moms, grandparents. Like, we get to engage with so many different people. It's deeper than just, you know, this is our team.
Angel City's core product is, of course, tied to team performance on the pitch. Winning games means more popularity, more engagement, and more fans. But building brand loyalty means intertwining the team's identity with fans' identities. Even if ACFC has a streak of losing games, they have to be central to fans' lives. That's why Angel City hosts about 250 events a year around LA, including watch parties, parades, and volunteer opportunities for local causes. Back to Kara and Julie.
But then it was, how do we hold our partners accountable? If you're going to become a sponsor of Angel City, how do we know that you share our values? Well, the answer was simple. You put your money where your mouth is. And so we developed the first of its kind, the Angel City sponsorship model, where 10% of our sponsorship dollars would go back into the community.
In its first season, Angel City didn't make the playoffs, but they won the bigger game, selling out home games and bringing more glitz, buzz, and attention to professional women's soccer than the U.S. had ever seen. And the league itself has upped its game as well. A new broadcast deal brings live games to ESPN, CBS, Amazon Prime, and Scripps.
It started by having higher expectations than anyone thought possible. we walked into our first investor pitch and we said we were going to get 10,000 fans and nobody believed us. They said, you'd be lucky if you get 5,000. You'd be lucky if you get 8,000.
And how many did we get, Julie?
We've sold out 5 games our last year of 22,000 fans North with an average 16, of 20,000 yeah. fans. Yeah. So, you know, we've season ticket holders that break 16,500 of a 22,000 seat stadium, which is pretty incredible. So one was having really high goals. The second part was recognizing that winning didn't just mean on the pitch. It didn't just mean winning a game. It meant giving back to our community. It meant building attention and awareness for women's sport. It meant driving the value of our individual players up. And then, yes, ultimately winning on the pitch. In our second year, we make the playoffs. In our third year, our goal is to win the championship. We believe we can do that. Winning on the pitch helps everything. But we wanted to make sure that we weren't defined only by winning on the pitch, because then that would affect our community building, our sense of belonging, and ultimately the revenue and the value that we could drive for the club.
Part of what I'm hearing is it's a combination of the entrepreneur's mindset of, okay, let's look at how it's been done before and borrow from it where we should, but not let that constrain us. And secondly, and critically, no upper limits.
Yeah.
No right? upper limits.
Which is something that I don't think we've seen in women's professional sports in this country ever before.
First year, we went from zero to $30 million in revenue. We did 4x the revenue that we told investors we were going to do in our first year. It was the highest revenue growth I have ever seen in any tech company.
In 10 to 20 years, I want us not only be the most valuable women's sports team in the world, be the first $1 billion women's sports franchise, but be able to show meaningful impact in our community. Because we'd never built a sports team before, we could build it the way we wanted to. And we got a lot right, but we also saw the opportunity for growth. I think the biggest area really was on the soccer side. The chemistry that the coaches need to have, the chemistry that the performance and medical team have to have, the trust they have to have amongst each other is pretty significant.
Bay FC wins the inaugural game in its franchise history. 1-0 on the road at Angel City FC.
At the first match of the 2024 season, ACFC faced off against the NWSL's newest expansion club, Bay FC. And the Bay team took the win, 1-0. Kara and Julie have said they want Angel City to be a roadmap for more teams. And while Bay FC doesn't have that Hollywood celebrity backing, they took a page from Angel City by forming a founders group of luminaries specific to their market, from tech, media, sports, and beyond. We caught a few moments with Bay FC founder, two-time Olympic gold medalist in soccer, Allie Wagner.
Angel City is one of the biggest reasons that there was, I think, motivation and urgency and interest from our group in the Bay Area to try to pull together a women's team. And I think what they did was they kind of set a different standard in what women's soccer was doing from a branding perspective, the way they connected with our community, really driving the business side of sport. Julie Ehrman was one of my greatest mentors and was standing there, always providing support, always providing the information that we needed to be able to understand what are the right moves that we need to make as we stand up our company, as we stand up our club.
So Angel City is already lighting the flame for more clubs, even as it starts a new season of fierce competition. Everyone will be watching. I so appreciate you all, what you do in the world, your time, your friendship.
Should we end this the way that we start every single Angel City football match?
Oh, so, yeah.
I mean, so we start every single Angel City match where everybody in the stadium together welcomes our players with a 3-clap that ends with a grunt that is from the soul, that has so much meaning. And it's really just our way to kick off a game. So maybe we can end
let's do it.
This way. Ready? Actually, you know how this works.
Let's do
all
this.
All right, so I'll count you down. 1, 2, 3. Yeah?
You guys are the best. Thank you. Coming away from this conversation, I'm struck by the power of questioning conventional wisdom. When Kara, Julie, and Natalie were told women's sports won't ever sell, they asked, why not? If we create a vibrant and inclusive community around a fantastic product, the people will come. Angel City shows that great things happen when you ask questions, stay relentless, and build the future you want to see. I'm Jeff Berman. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everyone. It's Jeff Berman, CEO of Wait What and co-host of the Masters of Scale podcast. Like many of you, my to-do list changes by the minute. Whether I'm working with partners or hashing out legal documents or brainstorming with our team, there is never a shortage of tasks that require attention and constant communication. Like Masters of Scale co-host Reid Hoffman, I know artificial intelligence is a huge part of our future, and Grammarly is an enterprising leader in AI. With Grammarly, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. It's like having a collaborator for my writing, helping me generate better first drafts and tailoring messages to our specific audiences. It's not only a superior AI tool, it is a safe AI tool. And as a CEO, security is always top of mind. Grammarly has 14 years of experience and a business model that never sells our data. Security has been a priority since day one and continues to be integral to Grammarly's values today. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster, hit their goals, and keep their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
Masters of Scale is a Wait What original. Our executive producer is Eve Tro. The production team includes Chris Gauthier, Alex Morris, Tucker Ligursky, Masha Makutanina, and Brandon Klein. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Original music by Eduardo Rivera and Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. Visit mastersofscale.com to find the transcript for this episode and to subscribe to our email newsletter.